Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Nobody else on Mars can brew beer quite like Paul Hopper. He's an earther who's been forced into servitude by a surly brewery owner, but he's the type who'd rather press on and drink his beer than cry in it. Despite his resignation to this situation, Paul soon finds himself on an adventure that could lead to his freedom. Listen on as James Van Pelt reads us his story, The Waylost Cafe.
It started with the missing Martian girls and Tomas, the barjack who owned the place and wanted to fire me. Hated Earthmen. Big league xenophobe, but there were rules and hiring quotas on spring he had to follow, even out here in a local watering hole like the Waylost. Besides, I brewed the beer and he couldn't. There's an art to it, you know. I'd quit, but he also managed to put a lien on the money I'd brought with me to buy my own place, seeing there was an irregularity in my immigrant status that didn't exist until his brother-in-law, the port of entry comptroller, invented one. Economic servitude sounds abstract until you have to live it. I looked across the smoky dining area filled with rocket jockeys and cargo crews knocking down beers. Tomas said something to Halloray-Anne before she disappeared into the dressing room. Even in the bar's dim light, I saw her flinch. Everyone flinched when Tomas talked. I knocked on Halloray-Anne's door. You okay? She turned from the mirror. No problems. She's Syrian, slender-boned, only standing in this gravity because a thin exoskeleton under her dress gave her the support. High cheekbones, big eyes, great voice, all peppery and low, dropping from note to note like peeling clothes. She put the torch in Torch Singer, made me think dreamy thoughts. She said, Tomas isn't clear on the distinction between employee and property. I nodded. He's slow that way. Don't let him hear you say that. Why he's always in such a bad mood is a puzzle. If I owned the Waylost, I'd count my blessings. You're a fine-tuned soul, Paul Hopper. Thanks. We're a threatened species. As on any Friday, people crowded the place, but none were earther except me. They clustered around the tables, head close together, clinking glasses, unwinding, downing Waylost beer. We attracted a working clientele who would rather whoop it up here than slink around in the kitchen at the Reverie Resort up the road, where they couldn't afford the drinks. Who wants to hang at the Reverie anyway? The wealthy don't mix with workers, and the Reverie's trails to the forest are durocrete, not dirt, and fenced in. Automated tours, strap tourists into electric gurneys so they can't wander around, about as sterile and spontaneous as a dental appointment. No, if you really want to experience spring, you skip the Reverie. The banner over our entrance reads, Find Your Path at the Waylost. Booze, music, or the forest are on the menu. I checked my bank balance earlier today, about a third of the way to my goal. Not bad after 3 years doing Tomas's scut work. If tips were good tonight, I'd be a day or two closer to opening my own joint. I'd given up on the money that was rightfully mine. You can cry in your beer, I always said, or you can drink it up and press on. I monitored the back door. The two Martian women had left a half hour ago to try our wild trail into the forest. If they didn't return in 15 minutes, I'd put on a face mask and fetch them. You could tell the forest was good, if every minute you were in it made the next one sound like a better idea. But it's bad for business if the patrons turn themselves into fertilizer. Halloray-Anne started her first set. Folk swayed in a sea of shadows below her. Green footlights painted her into a ghost on the stage, one with the mic stand, singing a lonely song about unrequited love. I've worked a lot of jobs. Been places. Nothing like this, though. I'd heard when you found your passion, you should stick to it. Mine is bars and brewings. I like dim lights, glasses, clattering, people laughing. I like when bags of malt and barley come in when the wort is fermenting in the big tank. I felt mellow and generous. Everyone deserved a hug. A loony cruise ship lieutenant, sporting gaudy chevrons, carrying himself with drunken determination, headed my way. "Are you sure the air is properly filtered here?" he asked. State of the art, fully inspected. The inspection tags were at least a couple years out of date. "Why do you ask?" "I feel too good." He straightened his shoulders. "When I feel too good, it's almost always the air mix." "What are you drinking?" He looked at the glass in his hand as if he was surprised to find it there. "Something on tap. It was dark." "That's it," I said. "Way Lost Spiced Stout, guaranteed to fix what ails you." I'd introduced the brew when I got here and had been perfecting it ever since. It would have been an award winner if anyone else on Spring made their own. He squinted at me. "You're an earther. You don't know anything about air mix. When you open a door to the outside, you just keep breathing." "Beer indeed. Stupid earther." Standard abuse. Earthers aren't well liked out here. He wasn't wrong, though. Much as I liked Way Lost Spiced Stout, what he felt was pollen from the forest valley. When the winds blow right, psychotropic pollen drifts up from the forest and seeps through the Way Lost leaky filters, turning everything mellow and sensuous. Beer tastes better. Skin feels silky, and the crowd acts bakery oven happy and warm. Above the rattle of glasses, against glass and low conversation, Halloran dealt the music, pouring honey pure. Didn't matter where you came from, Venus, Mars, Ceres, Titan, the belt, or if you were extrasolar and your ancestors' genes had been tweaked so violently to adapt to where you lived that you were as far from Earth norm as a bear from a dolphin. The pollen-laced music at the Way Lost was a balm. Terraforming a planet cost too much. Planet-forming the people is cheap. Who knew 1,000 years ago when Earth established the first colonies that the aliens we met would be us? Tomas stepped beside me. "Who's outside, Hopper?" Flat face and purplish skin, lavender hair in his arms. I had no idea what species of human he was. He carried a damp rag in one hand that constantly wiped horizontal surfaces. "A pair of Martian girls for the forest." "How long?"
40 minutes.
Tomas drew air sharply between his teeth.
"Better get 'em. Thin air metabolism's more susceptible to our soup. Are they wearing come-hithers?"
I checked the monitor. The girls were together in Crystal Grove, a popular stopping point. "Both of them." I put my finger on their coordinates. I lingered at the exit after Tomas left. Halloran sang once a week, and I was sure to miss her second set. She caught my eye and nodded my direction. I don't know how she saw me in the dark. Maybe it was a Syrian thing. A rush tingled in my arms and face. She's the only person here who didn't look at me like I was unevolved. The door locked behind me, closing forest access until I returned. Without the forests, Spring would still be an important stop as a shipping hub. Big freighters dropped cargo for warehousing that went to hundreds of destinations. The forest, though, brought in tourists. Evolution's a funny force, shaping life every which way. Here, where the ground wasn't fertile, trees and shrubs dominated the valleys. They lured nutrition in with drugged pollens. Mostly deer-like creatures that roamed in herds doused them with joy until they lay under the branches where busy rootlets burrowed through fur and skin, injecting them with toxins that transformed muscles, gut, and bones to a slurry before sucking them dry. Terrible way to go, if you thought about the mechanics of it. But the little deer died happy. The plants didn't care. Deer, people, it made no difference. Why the pollens worked on people was anyone's guess. We weren't from around here. Still, on old Earth, a black widow spider can kill a human. Why would nature make a poison like that? Black widows don't eat people. I've walked in the forest, delirious beyond comprehension, but still in control. That's the forest rush, to feel the call, the deep invitation to rest forever, and yet not do it. Oh, it's pushing an edge to stroll through Spring's woods. Death truly is a siren on Spring. The Way Lost kept two turtles in a shed behind the cafe. sturdy all-terrain vehicles with treads in back and big soft wheels in front. Face masks firmly in place, I fired one up. We kept the trails clear and well-marked. An octogenarian in a wheelchair wouldn't have trouble navigating, but sometimes people wandered off the path, reeling with pollen visions. That's why we tagged tourists with come-hithers. Finding them wouldn't be hard, but if they passed out, the turtle could haul them back to sleep it off. The headlights cut through hazy air at the top of a rise before diving into the zigzag path down the short bluff. For a second, treetops waved beneath me, and then I was into the forest, the headlights revealing yellows, oranges, blues, and purple. Colors bloomed on the trees and ferns like a rainbow. The path was smooth and clear, 8 feet wide. Between the trees, shin-high ferns covered the forest floor, which pumped out the pollens that lured prey in. Ferns were the killers, connected by the roots to each other. When you walked through them, they clung to your pants, and if you fell, they'd reach out, cover you, and in a day, you'd be gone. Trails wove through the forest to popular spots, most with ground lights to mark them. Not all the pollens were the same, so the impact would change depending on where you went. Some people were real pollen connoisseurs. Most newbies went to Crystal Grove, where there were benches, which is where the Martian girls went. I had my own favorite spots. I frowned. The headlights revealed a jacket on the trail instead of a Martian. Beyond that, a shirt, shoes, pants, underwear, another jacket. The come-hithers beeped faithfully on the abandoned clothes. I picked up the first jacket. Nicely cut. Expensive. These Martians weren't luxury liner waitstaff, maybe high-class passengers slumming with real folk. The girls seemed happy when they left the Waylost, not suicidal. They'd asked about tomorrow's specials. A tall one and a short one, skin the color and texture of old leather, evolved to survive in Mars' thin atmosphere and unfiltered radiations. Young-looking for Martians in their early 20s. But removing clothes was what the depressed did. The old folks who decided to die in Spring's Forest, the terminally ill, some so crippled by age, disease, or injury that they couldn't walk. I'd drive them into the trees. A hospice worker helped them from the turtle. I'd left many a naked old person alone sitting in the ferns. They might look at me, but most didn't, lost in pollen dreams. They'd lay back, vanish into the plants as if they'd never been. It was a solemn moment, holy and beautiful, when their heads sank beneath the leaves. I climbed back onto the turtle and crept down the path, casting my gaze left and right. Weak people who let the pollen take them too deep pulled their clothes off too, but that was rare. They walked to the edge and euphoria pushed them on, which is why the Reverie Resort strapped tourists into motorized cars and why the Waylost didn't. Half of the Waylost rush was knowing that you could stay and coming back anyway. What was it that ancient earth poem said about the guy who rode his horse into the woods and them being lovely, dark, and deep? There was something about promises in it, and miles to go before he sleeps, the poem would lose its power if he was tied to the horse. Crystal Grove opened up 20 yards from where I found the clothes. They hadn't even made it to the clearing. I parked the turtle in the middle, then turned the lights off. It was too much to hope that they'd carried lamps with them. Beyond the ground lights that outlined the grove, the forest loomed darkly, a long red and purple curtain of borealis in the sky providing little illumination. I listened intently. People in the pollen often talked to themselves or hummed, but beyond an insect chorus of chirps and rattles, the forest gave me no clues. A powerful hand lamp from the turtle cut a misty swath into the trees. Dews glistened on the ferns. They'd be fine if I could find them before dawn, but much longer than that, and the ferns would have started their irreversible work. So, dew was the key. Moving slowly, I circled Crystal Grove, keeping the light trained on the glistening plants, uniformly wet all the way around. Halfway back down the trail to the discarded clothes, I found where at least one of the girls left the path, knocking dew from the plants. If they'd done this when the ferns were dry, I would have had to organize a search party from whoever was in the Waylost. They trooped down the trail, drunk or annoyed or both, join hands, and then move slowly through the underbrush until someone tripped over the missing tourist. The ferns covered so completely that there was no other way to hunt for someone. Even an infrared scope wouldn't pick up body heat through the leaves. Insects buzzed hypnotically. The forest's sweet invitation leaked around the face mask. I resisted the urge to take the breather off. Wouldn't it be more fun if I had to be out here anyways to feel the buzz? But danger lay that way. Every step released pollen from the undergrowth, doubling or tripling the exposure I'd receive on the path. I could see how it happened. The two girls wandering down the trail, reeling under the pollen's influence. One egged the other on, kicking at the plants as they walked. Probably took off their masks for extra big hits. You were safer doing the trail by yourself than with a crowd. In a crowd, you'd get to laughing and then do something stupid. When someone died, they almost always started with a group. Moving slowly, I covered over 100 yards. Ferns clung to my legs and reluctantly released, like walking through syrup. My light revealed trees and ferns in all direction. No trail now. The turtle and ground lights lost behind me. What spring looked like without people. I traveled to other parts of the planet, to the deserts north and the rocky beaches west. Like every place else, spring is complicated. But to me, spring's heart beat in the pollen forests. When I go, I'd like to do it here under the tall trees, stars peeking through and pollen falling down. What would it be like to strip and give myself to the plants? Fawns that brushed my knuckles made the skin tingle. How would it be when they grabbed me entirely? I kicked something solid that giggled. It turned out to be the short girl. "Are you okay?" I said. "I'm Paul Hopper, brewmaster from the Waylost." She didn't respond. Conscious, but blotto on unfiltered pollen. Carefully, I peeled the uncooperative furry leaves from her. Her eyes were open and unfocused, respiration shallow. She went over my shoulder, legs dangling in front and hands hanging behind. The average Martian is smaller than an Earther, but after 100 yards back to the ferns, I gladly put her onto the turtle and strapped her in. She smiled as if reliving a happy time. Antitoxin was probably unnecessary, but I injected her anyway and covered her with a blanket. The trail ended where I'd picked her up. Where was the second girl? Backtracking didn't reveal a place where they'd split. I stood on the main trail again. Had the other girl wandered toward Waylost before leaving the path, or had she gone past Crystal Grove? I headed to the grove, a hub for four paths leading to different ecstasies. The one from the cafe, another named Deep Dreamer that made you feel as if you were sleeping but conscious, an effect that was much more attractive than that description makes it sound. A second called Simpson Avenue. I don't know who Simpson was. That filled you with invincibility and confidence. And the third, Lover's Tryst, a truly orgasmic head trip. Nothing up Deep Dreamer, but a couple 100 yards in, the trees leaned and swayed as I walked and the faces formed in the bark, leering and grinning at me. I wondered if my breather leaked more than I thought. Simpson Avenue was a washout, too. Great feeling, though. Of course I'd find the girl, I thought with pollen-driven optimism. I turned the lamp off and walked by starlight and borealis. I didn't need it. My eyesight had become so sharp. She wouldn't have gone far, and who understood these paths better than me? But the dew-lined trail was unbroken, and I knew, utterly knew, that the Martian had chosen Lover's Tryst. I checked the time in Crystal Grove. An hour had passed. I called Waylost. Whoever answered sounded like he'd had a dozen beers too many, but he assured me he'd tell Tomas that I had the situation under control. In the background, Hillary Ann crooned a favorite of mine. I thought about her catching my eye before I left. Lover's Tryst narrowed a few yards in. The turtle would brush both sides if I drove this direction. Even through the breather, musk eddied around me, an intoxicating mix of a caught breath and warm skin, an effect I knew of pollen making my brain think it smelled a close bedroom and tousled hair. But knowing didn't change the way the trees became more like flesh, and the fronds reached toward me to caress. The dew broke to the left. I tightened the mask's straps, even though I wanted to take it off, to take everything off. My jacket suddenly bound too tightly. My shoes weighed me down. How could I be a satyr dressed like this? The wood nymphs would laugh and run away. I bit the inside of my cheek and pressed on. This time I did trip over the girl. Laying in the fronds sounded like the best idea I ever had. They wrapped my calves, pressed against my back. Being pollen drunk splits your brain in two. One part reels in the drug. It talks too loud and sounds profound. but the brain's other half levitates above the scene, watching in disbelief. What are you doing? Why are you breathing this poison in? You know you should leave. So I rested on the forest floor, my brain divided, one half savoring skin on fire, the blood rushing to the head, pulse languidly throbbing, while the other half said, stand up, do your duty, this is illusion. Hallory Yang sang a song she wrote about being pollen drunk called Floating the River Mind. If I closed my eyes as she sang, I smelled the ferns in the valley, sozzled in love with tune. I stood, held the lantern over the Martian girl. Uncovered, she glowed in the lamplight like a sculpture, sensuality's essence embodied. How could a form be more perfect? How'd I ever think a Martian skin looked like old leather? Reverently, I picked her up without the indignity of tossing her over a shoulder. I carried her in my arms. She wasn't Earther, but I didn't have the same reservations that some people have. Back in her ancestral past, we'd come from the same stock 100 generations ago, before the need to adapt to a terraformed Mars that even after centuries of work still had an atmosphere too thin for an Earthman to survive, whose surface radiation would kill someone whose metabolism hadn't adapted. She and her friend were beautiful in their own thick-skinned Martian way. I seated her into the turtle, injecting the antitoxin, then prepared to return to the Waylost. My hand rested on the ignition. I leaned my head back, looked through the tree limbs into the sky. Invisible pollen swirled around. Stars glittered like glowing sand behind the iridescent sheets. Once, Tomas asked me why I stayed at the Waylost. The people of Earth seldom visited this far. You should be with your own kind, he said in accusation. If he could see the sky like it looked tonight, if he could feel the forest embracing him and filling his head with such glories, he wouldn't need to ask. The turtle gamely handled the climb back to the Waylost, despite the extra load. A medtech waited for me at the back door, a Rexian of indeterminate sex named Graface, with short, scaly arms but marvelously delicate hands and a sharp-toothed smile, one of the handful of the people at the Waylost who weren't actively hostile. I couldn't remember what environmental conditions Graface had been planet-formed to adapt to. You're a wonder, the Rexian growled. You always find them. Graface checked their vitals, then compared the antitoxin dosages I'd administered to his charts. Just a formality, he knew I wouldn't make such a basic mistake. In the year, I'd pulled 6 wanderers from the ferns. They were all thankful, too, even though I'd saved them from paradise. They weren't suicidal when they went into the forest. If they were, they'd have signed a release. Tomas appeared the second I sat on the stool by the forest door. He said, lock the door and come into the office. The forest is closed for the night. A serious-looking Martian wearing a ridiculously large sidearm stood behind him. No one in the bar paid attention to me trailing Tomas and the Martian, except Hallory Yang, who watched from her place on the stage, her eyes luminous in the spotlight. Tomas did his business from a dark, claustrophobic room with a scarred desk, a beat-up office chair, and a mixed bag of multi-species pornography hanging from the walls. He called up the activity log from the forest door. You checked 14 people to the forest this evening? Sure, if you say so. I didn't count. Did you thoroughly brief each about safety procedures? Also, I don't see signed liability releases. The Martian crossed his arms over his chest, really beefy arms. I thought he'd been frowning before, but his face grew even more stern, like an old, bad-tempered baseball mitt. I could see where this was going. Something about the Martian girls. As long as I'd worked the door, we hadn't had our customers sign releases, and the only safety procedure I followed was to make sure everyone carried a come hither. I eyed the Martian warily. The rich ones with power had a reputation. Proud, arrogant, easily triggered, violent. Just as likely to deal their own justice on the spot rather than follow the law. And on spraying when someone who crossed the Martians disappeared, you didn't talk about it. That's the way it was. Nothing of importance happened on spraying that Martians didn't have a gripped in their leathery fingers. Well, the poor ones had a reputation, too. The dock crews liked working with them. You didn't want to stand against one. But if they decided you were worthy, you never went into a fight alone. Criminal behavior, the Martian said to Tomas. he positively snarled. Your negligent establishment endangered the ambassador's daughters. I'd never seen someone so angry. Not mine, said Tomas. I can assure you our policies were not followed. This, he looked at me contemptuously, Earther did not do his job. The Martian shifted his glare to me. I didn't twitch. In the tight confines of Tomas's office, the Martian could be on me before I took a step. Objecting would be pointless. This wouldn't be the first time being Terran worked against me, and now Tomas had his excuse. Without a job, my hijacked money would be forfeited to the government, although I'd bet the government would never see it. Tomas and his sleazy port of call brother-in-law would pad their accounts with my funds. The Martian didn't kill me. After old baseball mitt left, Tomas fired me. I cleared out my room. Tomas could be an ass, and not everyone treated me well, but the Waylost had been my home for 3 years. I grieved for the untapped beer coming of age in the brewery. Dimly, through the wall between me and the bar, Halloray Ann was into her last set. Most singers did, too. But she brought in the customers, and she knew she was one cross look from Tomas of being out of a job, even if she did more business than anyone else. With the forest at our back door, Tomas could make money playing the jukebox he'd installed for the lunch crowd, an authentically ancient-looking cabinet that appeared to play vinyl records. I'd miss her. My last act in the Waylost was copying beer recipes and erasing the originals. Tomas certainly could fire me, but I'd come up with those brews on my own. An hour later, a termination payment posted in my account and everything I owned on my back, I trudged up the road to town. To my right, below the long bluff, spring's narcotic forest spread toward the dry plains beyond. Somewhere in the middle, a narrow river meandered, feeding bogs hundreds of feet wide on both sides. To my left, knee-high lights marked the road's shoulder. Overhead, glowing green sheets rippled against the background stars. I'd heard the Borealis existed on Earth, but I'd never seen it, never been there. I'd been born on a ship to Earthers. Officially, racially, I was Earther, but that was it. Maybe I could find work at the Reverie. Even a ritzy place like that needed people to bus tables. I needed to hunt for a room to live, too. A dive would do, something cheap. A car roared down the road toward me, a big, official-looking one with government flags fluttering from the hood. I stepped into the shadows to let it pass. Looked like a Martian official vehicle. Another one zipped by a few seconds later, kicking dust into the air, ambassador flags flapping. No reason to head this way except for the Waylost. Nothing to go to beyond that. Getting me fired wasn't enough, I figured. I pictured old baseball mitt with his big upper arms and bigger pistol hunched over the steering wheel with bad intent burning in his eyes. I had to get off the road. It'd take no more for a few minutes for them to learn I'd left. There was only one way to get to town, and I was on it. A couple more miles remained, and no real place to hide if they knew I was on foot. Nothing coming either direction now. To the left was featureless naked land without a friendly boulder or bush. Nothing to hide behind except darkness. I moved to the bluff's edge. Not quite a cliff, but steep and treacherous, with only the soft glow from the Borealis for light. The suggestion of treetops waved 100 feet below. I glanced over my shoulder. Nothing coming yet. I broke into a jog, looking for a place to descend that wasn't quite hopeless. What's the worst that could happen? The Martian could shoot me. But even a mostly unsettled planet like Spring frowned on outright murder. I felt an unexpected chill. He didn't have to shoot me. A shove over the bluff, and I'd tumble into the perfect setting for an unsolvable crime. The forest wanted fresh meat. That's what it did. If I fell into the hungry canopy, my body would be an empty shell in a day and nothing at all in a couple weeks. I guess it's not the worst thing that could happen, if it was the only thing that could happen. Besides, who would care about one missing Earther? But if the forest was an ideal way to hide a body, it could also be an ideal place to hide, if one knew how to survive in the seductive woods, that is, if one could resist the urge to quit, to rest, to let the pollen dreams sweep them to ruin. Behind me, in the distance that led to the Waylost, a car crested a hill, its twinkling star headlights cutting the air. Another one followed. They disappeared on the gently rolling road, but there weren't many hills left. They'd be on me in a minute. I swung over the bluff's edge, holding on to the top. My left foot found a protruding rock to rest on, but my right slipped without support. The cars hissed toward me, inevitable and implacable. Committed to my plan, ill-advised as it might be, I let go with my left hand, held just by my right hand and foot, reached until I found a lower rock, then let go with my right hand. If I couldn't find a place for it, I couldn't climb back up. For 3/4 of the descent, I thought every move was the last. Rock that felt solid at first would crumble suddenly, pitching my weight to whatever else I braced myself against. My face pressed to the stone and spiny lichens that grew there. I forced my weight to favor the slight angle that kept the bluff from being an actual cliff. Blind to my path, I continued down. At any moment, a smooth section with nothing to hold on to might be my only choice, or the bluff could grow steeper. I couldn't even look to measure my progress. Each inch demanded attention. Each inch held its own panic and disaster. Then I felt strong, confident, sudden, like a wave passed over me. My hands quit aching. My legs didn't shake. I became a spider, a mountain goat, a cliff denizen. I laughed out loud, the sound startling me. I let go with one hand, swinging dangerously away from the rock. Below, so much closer than when I began, a breeze stirred the treetops. Insects buzzed happily. I pictured letting go, drifting the rest of the way as light as a cloud. The leaves, so indistinct earlier, stood out in sharp relief. Where had the light come from? Why did I feel I should name the plants like a crowd of children? Not putting on my pollen mask before I started down was a mistake. These were unexplored woods. I had no idea which effect the pollens below had, although if the urge to let go and slide the rest of the way like a kid in the playground was an indication, it was pumping up self-esteem. And who couldn't use some self-esteem? I asked myself as I slipped a half dozen feet down the bluff, holding nothing until I caught a craggy rock in my right hand, arresting my fall. A few slides and drops and miraculous recoveries later, I stood on the forest floor. With joy, I put on my pollen mask. Not that I needed it. I felt fine. I was fine. If I kept the bluff to my left while walking for another couple miles, I'd be at the Reverie's Duro Creek trails. I could walk right into the resort, bold as brass. I'd find that Martian muscle and his stupid gun and spit in his eye. And since I was in a mood, no lavender bastard Bard Jack who stole my savings and his crooked brother-in-law were going to hold me down, by God, I felt mighty. I smacked a tree branch aside, raining down leaves and pollen. I strode through the clinging ferns like a conquering king. Why, I would tell Halloran Ann what I thought about her and her singing, you know? That she shamed angels and rivaled sirens, and that Tomas wasn't good enough to be in the same universe she was the center of. But 10 minutes later, breathing screened air cleared my head somewhat. The problem was the pollen mask. It was single use, good for a couple hours tops before the pollen overwhelmed it, and even as experienced a forest aficionado as I was, the pure stuff would overwhelm me. I'd lose my mind in joy or lust or benign indifference, decide to rest, lay down, and that would be the end. Not a bad way to go in the least, but I wasn't ready. Old Earth kept an embassy near the Reverie. I could plead my case there. Even if they jailed me on some trumped-up negligence charge about what happened to the Martian girls, that'd be better than Martian thuggery leaving me to dissolve in the forest. But I had to get there. On the road, walking, I could cover a mile in 15 minutes. Here, I didn't have a trail to follow. Clingy, sticky fern stood waist-high over uneven ground. Trees grew in clumps that needed to be circumvented. And if I lost track to the bluff to my left, I could wander in circles. The borealis overwhelmed guiding stars, providing a shifting green light that moved shadows and wiped out depth perception. I pressed on. A heady thrumming rose in the air, then an ornithopter passed low overhead, searchlights stabbing down. The Martians truly weren't messing around. Sometime later, my hands were fern-sticky and tingling. Imagine your digestive system, a collection of hormones and acids tucked away inside you, designed to break food into usable nutrients, a toxic mess, but safely encased. The fern's digestive system started on the outside, on the leaves. What I needed were good gloves. Although the pollen mask would fail me long before my hands became a problem. I focused on not wiping the sweat from my forehead. A little of what was on my hands getting to my eyes would turn my hike into a sightless effort. My legs ached, my back ached. I leaned into each step, letting momentum break through the ferns. I'd already lost the bluff twice and had to make a wide circle to find it. 2 miles, an easy jog on an ordinary surface. I read a book about polar explorers on Earth once. An expedition to find the North Pole made it, but the storms grew foreboding as they returned until finally they could go no farther. They froze to death a few hundred yards from the camp that would have saved them. If they had known a warm fire and hot drink was so close, could they have kept going? Surely, yes. I thought about those polar explorers. The comforting openness of the reveries, Duro Creek trails must be close. I couldn't stop so short of the goal. The body was weak, but my spirit soared. When the ground began to slope to the right, tilting me away from the bluff, I observed it in heady delight. How wonderful the world was in its geographic diversity. I slowed down, tried to study the fern leaves and the tree leaves and the dangling weed that snaked through all of it, like tough vine binding me to the plants. Pollen penetrated my mask now, I knew. No panic. If I could write down my symptoms, I thought others would benefit. 90% of science was observation, after all. I'd become the ultimate observer, the watcher, the dispassionate recorder of life's wondrous variability. I imagined my opus, the complete catalog of plants along Reverie Trail. I wept into my mask at the beauty of the book, how its 1,000 pages would be rewritten every month to reflect changes in individual leaves. I'd name and know each one. Oh, the wonder of my book. Instead, I leaned forward for the millionth time, but instead of plants resisting, I fell, face down, lying on my side then, the pebbles on the Duracrete cast long shadows from the low trail lights. Tiredness overwhelmed me. I didn't want to move. What would happen if the pollen overcame me, but I wasn't in the ferns? Would the pollen delirium last forever, preparing me for an end that couldn't proceed? Did the ferns miss me? Did they feel disappointment? Then booted feet intruded on my view. The pebbles' lovely shadows disappeared, wiped out by motion. I tried to object, but my voice squeaked like a poorly oiled hinge. "This must be him," said a voice. "Stupid earthman," said another. They picked me up, put me on a litter, strapped me to a turtle, and drove up the trail. At some point, they shot me with antitoxin, and I slept. I woke hungry in a strange, wide bed. Thankfully, pollen produces no hangover. A huge chandelier hung from the bedroom center, a maze of intricately turned copper pipe and quartz crystal, supporting hundreds of tiny red-tinted lights like stars. Martian red. This wasn't a hospital, and it wasn't the Earth's embassy. I hadn't escaped after all. At least I wasn't in handcuffs. I pushed the sheets aside. Someone had dressed me in a soft set of pajamas, a little small for me, with a Martian embassy crest on the chest. My back and thighs complained as I swung my legs over the side of the bed. The bedroom door opened. A concerned-looking Martian nurse in medical smock peeked in. My room was at Earth normal pressure, evidently a concession to guests who passed out at Mars standard. "Oh, good, you're awake," she bustled in, pushing a cart. Within a minute, she'd taken blood pressure, checked my pupils, evaluated heart function, and measured residual toxins in my blood. "People aren't supposed to survive that long in the pollen woods," she said. "You're a lucky man." I couldn't figure out why I wasn't still in the woods. They could have easily dragged me back 12 yards into the ferns and let nature do its best. I wouldn't have resisted. A pair of Martians dressed in business attire drug in a desk and positioned it across the room, 10 feet from the bed. They left and returned with chairs they arranged on the left and right, like a makeshift courtroom. Next would come a judge, I guessed, a prosecutor and hand-picked jury. The trial would be quick. "Did he endanger the lives of Martian citizens?" the judge would ask. The prosecution would say, "He showed a blatant disregard for the victim's safety." "Is he an Earther?"
"Yes."
"Guilty. Carry out the sentence." And old Baseball Mitt would unholster his pistol. He might not even bother having me get out of bed. An older Martian came to the room, sat behind the desk wearing embassy silks and a sash. I recognized her, the ambassador herself. She folded her hands on the desk and studied me. I sat up, ready to stand in her presence, which would be a standard display of respect. Martians were big on respect, but the older woman shook her head and waved me down. Fine with me. Three Martian men, all younger and an older Martian, came in together and filled the chairs. Then the two girls I'd saved near Crystal Grove entered the room. The ambassador waited until they sat. "Is that the man?" the ambassador asked. The trial had begun. The Martian girls nodded. The ambassador and the older Martian stood and moved to the side of my bed. The man bent down and hugged me. I couldn't have been more shocked. He smelled not unpleasantly acrid, like sulfur, but mellow. The ambassador opened a flat box she pulled from her jacket, snapped it open, and showed me the medal, an embossed red medallion in the shape of Mars with a band laid diagonally across it, something in tiny Martian script written on the band. "My daughters would be lost to us now if not for your efforts in their behalf. I present you with the Order of Tharsis for extraordinary service on behalf of the people of Mars. A grateful mother salutes you." She put the medal on my chest and took my hand between her own and shook it. "May I present my husband and father of my children?" The Martian who hugged me smiled. I'd never seen a Martian smile. It certainly humanized his face. The ambassador said, "These are my sons." Each took my hand, saying, "We are brothers now in soul and deed," which sounded ceremonial and rote, but their grips were sincere. "And my daughters." The two girls, who I'd last seen naked and asleep in the pollinous ferns, hugged me too. The ambassador dismissed her family. When they left, she pulled a chair over to my bed, turned it around, and sat with her arms draped over the back, a totally different woman from the one who'd been so formal a moment ago. "The owner of the Waylos misrepresented your actions to my lieutenant yesterday. We investigated and found violations from top to bottom. I'm happy to announce he is under arrest. We have closed his establishment." I wasn't sorry to hear that Tomas was done for. A picture of the Waylos shuttered and dark saddened me, though. If they'd turned off the power, the beer in the fermentation tanks would go bad. I had high hopes for Crystal Grove Amber, an experiment on my part, and we tapped the last keg of stout a couple days ago. "Seeing the charge against you drops is the most I can do officially. My family owes you much more than that. Please, if any favor arises which is in my reach while I am ambassador here, let me know." She shook my hand a second time. "The doctors tell me that you're fit to leave. We are well met, O friend of Mars." "Ah," I said. "There is a little matter of my immigration status and funds I brought with me." The ambassador listened intently. Halloran, slender and elegant, stood in the embassy's lobby. She laughed when she saw me. "They told me you survived, delirious but healthy." We walked from the embassy together into spring's afternoon sun. I blinked against the light. The Martians favored a much dimmer illumination. At the port, miles down the road, a rocket rumbled and balanced on a long white tail as it blasted into the sky. Cars and trucks whispered past. Next door, the parking lot of the Reverie was nearly full. From here, only the slightest whiff of pollen forest lingered in the air. "It looks like we're out of a job," I said. "We are," she said. "I've saved money, though. No immediate concerns. I'm planning my next move." I imagined she would book a flight out, maybe back to Ceres or wherever singer who quieted the blues in a person's head would be in demand. Surely as soon as they heard her, they'd make offers. Halloran said, "I was considering buying a place of my own." Without a Tomas to harass her, she'd be happier too. She watched the rocket's trail dissipating in a wind that didn't reach us. "The Waylos is available, I hear." I hadn't considered that. She turned to me. "All I need is someone to be a partner, you know, to handle the day-to-day affairs, someone to invest in the place with me." I had money now, if the ambassador was true to her words. I had the funds I'd saved, too. "That makes sense." My next breath caught, like my lungs filled with gladness, like I'd taken a sweet, deep inhalation of forest pollen, soaring on a torch song, a rocket going up and up and could not be brought down. "I need a brewmaster," she added.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.